Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. It is 161, I believe, if I'm tracking correctly. How are you?
Somewhere around there. I'm good, sir. It's good to be back. It feels like it's been three forevers.
Yeah, it has. But, you know, it's always good to we've pushed some old, I wouldn't say old, but, you know, within the last 45 days of something we did. But it's good to be back in the Denver studios and getting
hard,
up to this again.
It's hard to believe the time expanse here. It's been... All right, do you think the year has lived up to what you and I talked about, like March, April timeframe? Well, we really don't have a feel for it yet, and maybe we'll get a better picture by September. I mean, here we are, Halloween, and we really don't have an idea.
Man, I'll be honest with you. I mean, overall, in terms of everything we've talked about on this podcast, everything in terms of just where life's going in general, it's been a balls-to-the-wall year, and just keeping on top of everything has been... been daunting, but as we said before in precast, it's been nothing but fun, and I think that's the most important.
So it has been. I mean, enjoying our work here, and it is work, but it's a first world problem. It's work we've chosen to do. It's something that we enjoy in doing, that we can hopefully at least get people engaged more. And you know what, we've received that. So
yeah,
and it's a big thing is getting people interested enough to at least show up and vote. Which is a topic of interest to you, I know.
Indeed. So, in terms of getting people engaged, I haven't done this in a minute. So, for those of you who are tuning in domestically and around the world, we appreciate that. As always, head over to modstate.com, and you're obviously of course, you're listening to us somewhere. But if you, in this politically charged climate, if you've got friends and family out there who are looking for some outlet to learn a little bit more about the happenings, the geopolitics, the domestic politics and whatnot, have them tune into the podcast. Now, you brought up a good point.
The Netherlands regions. By the way, I've long wanted to say this. And seriously, I mean no offense to our listeners from there, but that's an ominous name for a country you got there.
Oh yeah, the Netherlands. Yeah.
It just sounds like this just horde of barbarians ought to be coming over the hills.
I will say when you leave Amsterdam, and just that region in general, it's just flat and it's kind of foggy in the morning, and it does. I remember driving through there thinking, I get why. If the definition remains the same of what the Netherlands,
right,
the other regions or whatever that means, I mean, it truly lives up to its name. I could be butchering that, but oh well.
That's why we have the Dutch down in New Orleans helping us with the levee system now. I thought that's one of the smartest things our government's done in years.
I mean, it's due. I don't want to say it's due. I don't want to like put that curse out there, but. It's been on Florida, and it's been over in Houston, and it's like, okay, well, when could this possibly happen again? So
you know what? Let's continue no farther with this.
Noted. Okay. Nate. For those of you out there who are listening in other parts of the world, we do have an important election coming up. And notoriously in the United States, the midterm elections, which means it's in the middle of the presidential election, which is every 4 years, the midterm elections are notoriously a time for low voter turnout. Another thing that fairly regularly happens is the in-power party. Typically, that changes hands. It doesn't happen all the time, but statistically, it changes hands. It doesn't mean that both the Senate and the House of Representatives both change. But
all it takes is one, and it's like the A-bomb. It shows up, and the party's over.
Yeah. Yeah, so really...
Things will change in D.C.
Yeah, and so what you're seeing for those who aren't or are following American politics from afar, this is fairly politically charged in the United States right now because there's a major push and a huge moral cause for a lot of people to vote because of the current administration. So for those people who maybe didn't show up in the 2016 presidential election are surely planning on showing up in the 2018 midterms. Which leads us to an interesting topic. John and I, like, you're not here. We have talked at length about beginning to focus our podcast episodes on a little bit more policy. And the reason we were thinking about doing this was because we don't, I think talking about policy specifically lends a little bit more to a good back and forth in terms of where our political ideologies align. And there isn't a lot that we disagree on. I think there's some fundamental things that we have some differences in opinions, but policy itself lends to more disagreement and good debate and in an overall civil debate, as we always do have here. So I was thinking hard, as I do sometimes, about what we could talk about in terms of policy. And one thing that we have that isn't on any ballot, that isn't really being talked about, but is certainly in a grassroots movement slowly being talked about, is the idea of voter reform or voting reform. And this is not really something that's in the interest of policymakers to really follow up with.
Not across the board reform, no. To a certain degree, it favors one side, but I don't want to spoil the party here. Continue.
So, excuse me. And that lends itself to the interesting beginning to this episode, and that is, what would a voting referendum or voting reform bill look like? Who does that benefit? Who does it not benefit? And at the end of the day, we're not concerned. At the end of the day, no American individual, no American citizen should ever be concerned about how it benefits politicians. But ultimately, those politicians who would probably not benefit from this as much are the people that will essentially make this reform.
That's why that's, well, all right, you know, yeah. Continue.
So starting this off,
the idea of letting the decision to reform this system be in the hands of the people currently running this clown show, this clown car, is absurd to me. Is. I mean, I'm serious, more and more constitutional convention come on, but do continue.
Yes, and I think we do need to have an episode dedicated to what a convention would look like.
I'll drop it. I know. It's like, you're all right. Next up's a Nixon reference. And
a constitutional convention is certainly.
And the Fifth Act. There, I checked all the boxes.
There you go. You sure did.
All right. Go.
So I'll ask a question. And it's going to be rhetorical now because we obviously talked about this. But
ooh.
Yeah. But let me pose the question to our listeners out there. And to preface this, the intent of a voting reform act would essentially increase voter turnout. So that means it gives people better access to voting polls. It means
more people would vote.
Essentially, yes, more people would vote. It would make a fairer system. It would make a more streamlined system. And we'll get into more of this. But with that being said, increasing voter turnout, which would essentially be the consequence of a voting reform bill, who then, or what party then, benefits more from increased voter turnout? I'll let you all marinate on that for a second. The question is, if you increase voter turnout from a consequence of a voting reform act or bill, what side of the political ideological spectrum will benefit?
Well, I think our listeners are astute enough to surmise that it's probably the party that's not wanting increased access that is going to lose here. So the party that's wanting greater access, the Democratic Party,
stands
to win.
Absolutely. And I think without pulling any statistics, without really having
to be liking them more.
No, and it's not. And I had to get this out as the first thing that we talk about, because this voting reform or this idea of voter reform act is not because of my political ideology or the way I swing with my political ideology. It's just a fact of creating any sort of reform around voting at all. It does and probably will overwhelmingly benefit the left-leaning ideology. So
I mean, but the idea, well, gosh, I can't get away from it. Anyway, just the inmates are running the asylum and we're going, all right, now y'all just calm down. We're going to fix things.
It's so
let's tear into this.
This sort of lends to the next question. So, well, let's look in first before I dig into to more of that. The next question some people are asking is, okay, well then what does a voting or voter reform bill look like? And we can lay the facts out fairly quickly.
Not Citizens United.
Yeah, not Citizens United. And for those of you who don't know what that essentially allows corporations equal to the voice of an individual. And that was passed, ratified.
And they could donate. Basically allowed super PACs to run riot is what it really.
Absolutely. And so that's a whole nother episode we could have on dark money, et cetera.
It legalized corruption. Let's be honest.
It really is. I mean, there's, again, the things that we're talking about aren't because of a political bias that I hold or that you hold. It's just the fact.
Citizens thought it was bipartisan.
Yeah, which is crazy. Which is absolutely crazy. Maybe in the future somewhere it will turn around and benefit the left. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't benefit them, but
I think it benefited the bipartisan, and I mean duology status quo.
Oh, absolutely. And you mean what he means by that is
guaranteed. Yes, there would be no runoffs. There would be no third party. It's not possible based on finance.
It would always be Democrat and Republican. And
the money has ensured that the Libertarian Party, the Green Party, any party, the Communist Party, the whatever, is not making, for example, the presidential ballot.
No,
ever.
Ever. Ever. Which leads...
Seriously, and not take it seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's some facts here to
incumbency, essentially, of the parties.
Yeah, so there's some facts to point out here. The first being that nowhere in the Constitution does it ever say that there needs to be two parties. So...
Or any parties.
In fact, I believe there was a few of the founding fathers that were very wary of any parties at all.
Old JW.
Place. Yeah, but most of us have grown up in a climate, at least millennials have grown up in a climate, where we've known nothing other than the two-party system. So breaking that down.
Cool.
Yeah. So the first, and this isn't really anything that would go into a reform bill at all, but really, it's
a reform bill.
A reform bill. That doesn't make sense. Boy, oh boy. What we need to do, and one thing that has happened in this country, is that we need to make the moral case to vote again. And there's a lot of reasons that people stand out of elections, and that might be because of disenfranchisement in terms of the two-party system that we have. That there
or
is
maybe disillusionment for the same reason.
Yeah, absolutely. It could be, let's say it's a blue collar worker. He has just voted for Trump because Trump said that he's going to bring back jobs. The jobs don't come back because, hey, guess what? Capital is still overseas, and that job is not back in the United States. So now he's also in the past voted Democrat. So let's just say moderate Democrat who essentially lost the vision of the American worker as well, and now he's just disenfranchised. He has nowhere to turn, because even if he did turn to a progressive platform, he's essentially his voice is not being heard there because of our current system. That person's not getting elected anyway. So the things that we present here, the things that I've talked about, are trying to make the moral case for people to vote again, or just giving them some sort of empowerment to vote again. So what could we do? What would be packed into this bill? Some things that I would like to see. Let's start with the easy ones. The first would be blanketed automatic voter registration. So for us gents out there, when we turned 18, we had to do something. What is that thing? We had to automatically... We had to automatically
leave that alone.
Yeah. We had to automatically sign up for Selective Service. We walked in and we had to fill out that card. And there's no reason.
It made us eligible for those of you internationally, that made us eligible for the draft.
God forbid that ever happens again. But it did. It made us eligible for the draft to go to war. Nowhere do you see, or very rarely, because I don't, well, that's a lie. I think there are some states now that do automatic voter registration.
Well, don't lie, Nate. Not here. Not,
you're right. There are some states that do automatic voter registration, but it would be as easy as showing up to get a driver's license in a new state if I moved to Colorado.
That easy.
At the same time that I'm getting a establishing residency, I'm also automatically registered to vote. It doesn't mean I have to. It's not compulsory voting. It's not illegal to not vote, but it automatically registers me to vote.
As easy as getting an ID, huh?
Yep, as easy as getting an ID. I know we'll get there. Yep. The next would be the national holiday for voting. As we know, November 8th in the United States is when we vote. Now, we'll be very clear. Why November 8th? Well, November 8th, a Tuesday, or typically that Tuesday, was after, in the past, when most farmers were able to have had all their crops in and everything was done, and they were able to leave their farms and come vote. The second part of that was it took a while to get to the voting booth, so we had to give them an extra day. So we wouldn't do it on Monday.
Earlier.
On Sunday, you went to church, and then on Monday you traveled, and on Tuesday you voted. So that's another reason it's on Tuesday.
Hell yeah.
Yep. There is no reason, absolutely no reason, why this should not be a national holiday. Now, I would take it one step further in my bill. I would move that date to a weekend. I keep church for Sunday, but I would make it a Saturday. The issue that you run into with a Tuesday election day is that, yes, this is fine for salaried workers. This is fine for because your employer legally has to let you go vote. They cannot keep you there, and they cannot fire you because you voted. But for a large chunk of the American population, it doesn't mean that the employer has to pay you. So if you're working for low wages, it's not advantageous for you to leave that job for 2 or 3 hours to go vote, because that's how you pay rent. So I would move it to a weekend, to a Saturday, or I would give multiple days to be able to vote. But we'll get into that.
Also, 24 hours and problem solved.
Yep, you could do that. But if you moved it to a Saturday, yes, there still would be people that there would be people that would have to work on Saturday. But statistically, it would be a lower chunk of a lower number of people that couldn't.
You know what else it would take, Nate?
What's that?
It would take, and I'm talking specific. You know who you are out there, millennials. I know your tricks. It would take you getting up off your ass and going and exercising your right. But anyway, do continue.
Of course. the next couple things we could do would be same-day voter registration. So in some of the most restrictive states to vote, Mississippi being the most restrictive state to vote, there are absolutely no same-day voter registrations, meaning that on the day of voting, you cannot walk in and you cannot register to vote and vote.
No, you got to be prepared to do this thing.
I suppose, man.
You should have been ready.
I guess. Wow. Let's move on to let's break these down. Let's break these down in order of the most we can talk about. The next one, of course, and this is where we start to have some points of contention. But the next would be voter ID laws, and this kind of goes in hand with mail-in voting. And before we jump into voter ID laws and mail-in voting, I'll address the mail-in voting and what that looks like. So in some states, like,
males need to get themselves under control.
I was waiting for something and I got it. So in Colorado today, it's October 23rd, almost the 24th. I received my ballot in the mail. My wife did as well. And I registered to vote as independent, and I've got the full ticket right on my table over there. That means for the next 2 weeks, I can come home and I can research every... What's that?
Make copies.
Oh, I see where you're going. Okay, hold on. So I can sit and I can research every candidate and I can research every ballot initiative that's on there. I have to have it back by 7 p.m. on November 8th. So this is another method. Now, I don't know where voter ID laws or voter ID initiatives fall under my voter voting reform bill. I don't know how this plays into it. However, what I do know is that I don't need...
I doubt they make it at all into your final draft.
I don't think so, because the voting, mail-in voting doesn't require an ID. It requires a signature. And there's a lengthy checks and balances system before it's actually counted.
So the fraud is probably as common as Social Security fraud then, because people do it. I mean, their relative dies and they keep, you know.
Absolutely. Now, I am not saying
I don't know how prevalent that is.
Yeah, I'm not saying that voter mail-in voting is not resistant to fraud.
Because if you can keep getting old granny check, you know, and she died when George W. Bush was president, I mean, you can surely do that here, but it's probably not easy to pull off, and the threat of prison probably deters quite a few federal prison.
Absolutely. So, obviously, you need a signature stamp, so you need to be able...
The whole tried it out.
Yeah, it's I guess in terms of electronic voting versus mail-in voting, that in terms of security, there's greater wholesale risk to electronic voting than there is to mail-in voting. It doesn't mean that there's not fraud with mail-in voting, but it takes far more effort and on a way broader scale and way more effort to commit fraud with mail-in voting than it does a single hack to a voting system that's electronic. So in terms of security, it certainly is more secure in that terms for wholesale fraud than it does for electronic
voting. It's not as easy to hold the whole system for ransom.
Exactly. Exactly. Now,
we're not comparing it in that instance to voter ID law. We're comparing that to this more along the lines of the general status quo, outside of places like Mississippi, of course.
Yes. So now where this plays into the voter ID law is that voter ID laws, I guess in conjunction with mail-in voting, that voter ID laws do lend itself to less access and more restrictions. Now, you brought up some good points in precast, and I know that now this is your time to air those grievances, but it is true that there are always going to be people who are lazy and won't get a state ID. But there's a difference between everyone that does not have a state-issued ID, do we lump them into everyone's lazy that doesn't have it? Or
that's
is
not
it,
exactly what I said.
I realize that. But I guess the broader question then is, what's the major reason that they don't have an ID to vote? Is it because of their apathy to have a state ID? Or is it because of access and the ability to get a state ID?
I guess I just look at this like, okay, you have to have an ID to do virtually anything. We're not talking about paying cash for a soda here, but you want to do anything as a big kid, as an adult? You want to do adulting, as our awful generation likes to say? Mm-hmm. Well, you got to have an ID to do, I don't know, anything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Along the way, I mean, I get it. There are people left behind in our society, okay, but there's nobody living like that tribe that on that island off of Australia. You know what I'm talking about. You've got family in New Zealand. There's a group over there that has no connection. It's Stone Age.
I believe it. Yeah.
And they don't want anything to do. Yeah. They've put like 400 arrows in the underside of an airplane the other day. It was awesome. The guy lived. It's like craziness. Anyway, we're not talking about that kind of society here. All right, all I have to do to prove that, yeah, it's anecdotal, okay, but look at the problems we discuss in our society, by and large. Look at the technology issues that we have.
I hear you loud and clear. I think where I start weighing pros and cons of the different systems that we have. I mean, we looked that up in precast.
You 18 to vote. How many 18-year-olds have zero access to a state ID, even if they can't drive?
That's true. And
to get benefits, you have to have one.
Absolutely. I think in cases where, okay, I'm not against voter ID laws. However, it is that my issue
you're more opposed to it as an exclusive
form. Is an exclusive way to bar you the ability to vote. So I kind of posed this question in precast, and I said, listen, with everything that we have, we know, and we looked it up in precast, that it is actually cheaper to do mail-in voting than it is to man polling stations. Now, of note, Colorado still has polling stations, but it's less expensive because less people show up to cast a ballot because you can mail it in. So with these different systems in place and statistically showing that there's less fraud, or it's nearly impossible to commit wholesale fraud with a mail-in system, why do we have voter ID laws? If we're wasting money by letting people go to a polling station, so what is the reason we really have voter ID laws? So who really are the proponent of voter ID laws? They're overwhelmingly conservative individuals who would like to push voter ID laws. Now, my next question from there is, okay, are we really, as the conservative group here, are we more concerned about voter fraud, or are we more concerned about
losing?
And I think
right. The
visceral reaction that I have to that is they're more concerned about losing than they actually are concerned about the fraud.
Well, and, to be clear, in the future, voter ID is not my final solution.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not suggesting that either.
That's antiquated. But anyway.
Yeah. So
that again, you have to see who's running the asylum here. Again, I think it would be quite possible for the whole thing to be stacked no matter what they do there.
Very true.
Hand counting ballots or hand sorting them?
I mean, there's always risk everywhere for some sort of fraud. But I had to ask the question, at least to myself, what is the reason we are really pushing voter ID laws when we've got these other methods out there that are proven that work and are actually, in some cases, more successful for voter turnout, unless voter turnout is not what you want. So we can kind of let's move on from there, because this voter ID laws will probably tie into.
You said, you know, you answered yourself and you said, I know the cause of this problem. Somebody else, you know, another group here.
Well, and
who there, stands to lose?
It really does come down to who stands to lose now.
And that separates me from that group is I'm going, no, the system needs reform. Anybody against that is selling something.
Well, yeah, and you said it in precast well. You said, I'm willing to cut through the fat on either side of this. Wherever you see it, you'll call bullshit on it.
The motivations, in my opinion, on both sides are to be kind, non-topical and absurd.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean,
the motivations are less than, I think they're both disingenuous.
Yeah, I think especially in the two major.
They're very pretentious.
Yeah, and in terms of, so gerrymandering something, it will kind of tie into the next, probably more contentious, controversial, addition to my voting reform bill or policy that I would enact, and that is a different voting style, in general. So scrapping, not necessarily mail-in voting or in-person voting.
We're gonna do a head count.
But an actual voting style that's different from what we do now. Now, what we typically see, and there are major cities out here, and I mean cities because cities are doing this, that are running this system that I'm proposing that eliminate things called the spoiler vote. So if anyone who's ever voted in the United States or has been around people that have voted have heard this. Well, I had to vote for the lesser of the two evils. And what that means is there were probably, let's just say there were three candidates on the ticket running. There is a Republican, a Democrat, and we'll just throw in a Bernie Sanders progressive.
Yes.
If the Bernie Sanders progressive is your number one vote, and your least favorable candidate's the Republican, then you have cognitive dissonance at the poll. You have to say, okay, listen, I really like this Bernie Sanders progressive, but I know he's not going to win.
I know he's not going to live because he's 119 years old.
Fair enough. That's why I said a candidate, not him.
I couldn't resist.
Yeah. Who do you vote for? Well, you vote for the lesser of the two evils. You vote for that moderate Democrat because you know that person stands more of a chance. You don't want to waste a vote on that progressive candidate, so you vote for that Democrat. So this leads to a lot of disenfranchisement.
This person you're describing is sick.
Clearly. So what does that mean? What does a different voting style look like?
Sanders or Hillary? Like, what did you fantasize about as a kid?
I don't know. So this style of voting would be a rank style voting. And what that really means is that pretty much, and you've had some thoughts on a similar style to this, but really what that would do, it would shake up the entire sort of landscape of...
It could work within it. Yeah, I'm talking about the frame, macro frame. You're talking about basically weighted ballots. If there's 10 people on the ballot, the first place person gets 10 points. If the 10th place person gets 1 point, well, you do the ballot the same way. I mean, to me, the simplest way to go about this would be, look, put on here your select the candidate like now, because it could be confusing to people. I get it, especially in larger elections like I'm talking about, parliamentary style. So you would just pick one candidate. Forget about weighting things yourselves. Okay. You pick that, there's a runoff, you know, if somebody doesn't have an outright majority, 50.1% of the vote, then there's a runoff of the top two finishers, because then that means somebody got a plurality. They got more votes than everybody else, but still not a majority. It's a difference.
Yes.
So with that, those next two candidates come in. Well, in that circumstance, you could see a Libertarian Party candidate or a Party candidate emerging, or some other new party, okay? That's where I come from saying Constitutional Convention time, because I'm telling you right now, all right, they will change the Constitution. Democrats will vote to change the Constitution to repeal, I forget the amendment, the one that restricted the president to two consecutive terms and 10 years total. They will repeal that so that Donald Trump can get reelected before those two parties will unite to break up that duopoly. Asking them to eat themselves.
Absolutely. And so, I think that the system that you proposed is probably more, it's even easier to comprehend than the rank style voting, which would be if you had, let's say you had those three candidates or four candidates for that matter. You had a Libertarian, a Republican, a Democrat, and a progressive, like a Bernie Sanders progressive.
Yeah,
well, you could go ahead and rank your four from most favorite to least favorite. So 0 points to the Libertarian, 1 point to the Republican, 2 points to
your vote. You would have 4 parts to your vote.
Exactly. So if your progressive if your progressive who had the most points did not, or 1 point for that matter, doesn't matter, didn't win, your point or your vote would then be assigned to your second favorite candidate. I realize this sounds confusing, but what it does do is it allows you to not have to deal with the spoiler vote, that it's not as if your vote or your rank really affected anything. It still gets allocated to, I guess, the political ideology that you most align with. So you're not really worried about sacrificing your vote to someone that you don't like.
You have nothing to fear, Donnie. These are nihilists.
Right.
Wouldn't that be a great party?
Oh man, the nihilists. So what would this rank style voting do? I think ultimately what this bill would do as well as increasing voter turnout, something like this also allows the ability for the power to kind of go back to the people, so that your representatives, and look, sometimes gerrymandering favors Democrats, and it also in some cases favors Republicans. So, but what is that? It's essentially the politicians picking their own constituency, picking their own voters. Now, of course, you could create third-party companies or third-party institutions to create their own district, to create districts, to create district lines. But by creating any of these systems, you really do away with gerrymandering. You do away with politicians picking their own constituency. Its effectiveness. Yeah, absolutely. It does undermine its effectiveness. Because
you're never eliminate people that want to cheat.
It's for whatever
motivations, that's just always going to be the case. Okay, it's just like this idea, it's a separate issue. Although, if we just treat people like human beings, which we should, we don't have any need for more prisons, okay? Yeah. We know how you feel after your daughter gets raped.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And
you want to move on society. Well, it's the same type of thinking.
Yeah, there's always caveats to this. However, I guess
trying to come up with the best possible solution that disenfranchises the least possible people.
100%. So you're really trying to disenfranchise the least amount of people, as well as
afraid of the people leading. Guess who is? And that's a bipartisan thing, okay? Again, Citizens United was not something that was like a 50-49 vote.
Yeah, no, it was not. It was
real.
Yeah, so this really it spans my dislike for the two-party system more than it does my dislike for a lot of conservative ideology or far left progressive ideology.
Any party leaning here, okay? Because if everybody, nobody's right if everybody's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Say it again.
It really does do a lot in terms of taking away, I don't want to say taking away the power from elected officials, but we have been living in a system for quite a while that's been the status quo.
Right. That is the right way to put this.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Government to be more afraid of its people than the people are of its government. That's the way this country was founded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a foreign idea to us. Okay, but, and again, I hate to crank it up again on the Smith-Munn Act, but with the ability to manipulate information now legally to the American people in conjunction with this, well, again, that was bipartisan, signed by President Obama, passed by a Republican-held House in 2012. The Democratic Senate ratified it, and they were so proud of it, they hit it in the defense spending bill.
Yeah.
So this same group of people, people are going, why does he keep beating this drum? Because I'm painting a big picture here with a lot of dots. Connect those dots. I mean, we've legalized the financing of legalized corruption. And then we want those people that we send November 8th. I'm not saying Ms. Cortez will fall, but with 96-97% of them, I'm not saying that most of them go there to do well, but unfortunately, everything turns out to have a price with the vast majority of the population. And that's just the reality. And that's what Citizens United allowed, for instance. And now you couple that with the destruction of possibly of net neutrality, the destruction of the law that said it was illegal for the government to deliberately, overtly lie to the American people through the media. And I'm telling you, this is a nasty picture.
It is. And quite frankly, I mean, it may sound conspiratorial. It might sound tinfoil, but it's really not. I mean, all these things that you just talked about are...
Look it up.
It's all true. I mean, it is the current situation that we live in right now. It's almost like a noose tightening around your neck, but you don't feel it. You don't know what's happening.
And the idea of any sort of connecting of these dots is such an absurd idea to people why would they do that? Why do you think? What is the saying about absolute power? It's been said a million different ways in probably as many languages.
I mean, I'm
not saying this to discourage everybody. I'm saying this is the reason why this is so important. This topic tonight is self-reinforcing.
Absolutely. I mean, it's maybe possibly one of the most important topics we've talked about in 161 episodes.
The First Amendment.
Yeah, other than that. I mean...
And it's why it protects the First Amendment.
Yeah. So it's yeah, I think we can look back at history and we can look at all dictatorships, all regimes, all fascist regimes, all communist regimes, and we have the the ability to Monday morning quarterback it and say, well, if we had just done that, well, why didn't we see it coming? Why did this? I mean, what you're proposing, the things you're talking about, are the beginning of a potential for absolute power.
Totalitarian state.
Yeah, you have to be careful. You always have to be wary of that. I think founding fathers were wary of that when they crafted
freedom
this constitution.
And extinction.
So, again,
it's always freedom in the name of security.
Yes, and at
great.
The end of the day, my idea of voter reform or voting reform is something that we should be. Continue to be talked about in grassroots movements and continued to really put forth candidates that believe that we do need this change. And what becomes very difficult is when they the second that they become political insiders and not outsiders, they're sort of beholden to a system. And this will continue to happen. I believe
both sides are too busy arguing over race and how our physical appearance should look during the national anthem, I believe a lot of that, yes, is contrived. They don't have to focus on a real issue here. The reality is, as I said precast, if the president has the authority to executive order a pay freeze for federal workers, fine, that's within his purview, okay? But as part of my idea for a constitutional convention, the one thing to go for is this type reform and mm-hmm. say, look, I mean, we've done radical things with amendments before, folks. We've outlawed slavery. We've allowed women to vote. Those at the time were very radical things to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, to say that the president could be removed for a case of mental defect, that was a radical thing to do. All right, FDR won 4 elections. We now limited it to 2. Okay, so it's not like it would be crazy for us to change the chief executive's title to prime minister and to create a bill that outlaws, create a law, an amendment that gets rid of Citizens United, for example, limits the amount of money that can get involved, demands that everyone have equal access to both selecting a ballot and being on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that are very possible to accomplish. And along with that, you would set up rules for voter access. You would set up all of these ideals, and you would have, say, 13 parties like there was in Israel's parliament at one point. I'm not sure how many are there. I haven't looked lately. But, and they would have to form a they have to work together, because the likelihood of a majority, especially in a country with this varied regional identity politics, but that brings me full circle to, they don't have to talk about any real reform. The Democrats, again, I've pointed this out, had carte blanche with Obama and a unified Congress, and they did nothing on illegal immigration. I repeat that, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
They could have gotten anything in they wanted to do. They did nothing on cannabis.
I mean, they could have done something on voter reform. Yeah.
They could have done a lot of things, okay? And what have the Republicans done with unified government? Okay,
yeah.
So, if anybody hasn't heard before, I'm really happy that Paul Ryan's not going to be Speaker anymore.
I had no idea.
He's resigning, folks, and I'm thrilled. Paul, and enjoy it, man.
Yeah, he's gonna He's gonna go and head up, get in on some.
Oh, he's gonna sit out the rest of the 2 years, and he's gonna come back to K Street.
Yeah, he'll do a Boehner, and he'll get on some this
Boehner's on K Street.
New marijuana company.
Oh, yeah.
And just ride it out until legalized marijuana in the United States. And
yes, that character to do something when there's a bunch of commas and zeros involved.
I was gonna say, not giving two shits, middle
what
fingers to the air. Boy, well, hey man, I'm at about 5%. The low battery sign just flipped up on my laptop, and I've got to work tomorrow. But hey, it's always great to talk about these things with you. And I think we've opened up, for multiple podcast episodes in terms of policy, just.
Oh, we've let so many cats out of so many bags.
I'm going to have to listen to this one again and jot down some notes and some things we need to talk about. I definitely think Citizens United being one of them in terms of maybe policy to look at reversing something like that. But I know a lot of international listeners don't really know what that is. But it's kind of gross when you break it all down and the fact that it was bipartisan.
And however difficult, it is possible to get something, to get a national referendum going.
Yes, yes. I
it
think.
Is possible.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, what we really need to think about is historical context moving forward, that there were things that happened that were unheard of at the time that they happened, but they did, and we were better for it. So do you think, I guess to leave this question at the end of this podcast episode, is if you were to go back and sit down with the founding fathers and say, hey, here's where we currently are in our climate, you've seen all of history up until this point, would it be crazy? Would you think it would be crazy if the president became the prime minister and we had more of a parliamentary style, there were more parties and they had to work together? Do you think the founding fathers would say, whoa, that is way off base than what we thought?
Yeah, do you think they would say that the status quo is, I mean, no, zippity, dude.
I think they would be more appalled today at the current system.
They would say, y'all got to do something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So with that, as we walk our way to the midterm elections sooner than later, if you have not registered to vote, make sure that you're looking in your districts, in your states, as to when that voter registration closes. If it closes soon, please get to a place to register to vote. You can go online pretty much anywhere and just Google that for your state and be involved, be engaged, and vote. I mean, this will be an historic election regardless of how you vote, and will shape the next 2 years. So with that, my friend,
au revoir.
We'll see you.